Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of June 18th, 2019. This week, we look at a new South Carolina 2020 poll, recap the Black Economic Alliance Forum in Charleston, and preview the High Holy Week of political activities centered around the state Democratic Party convention on Saturday. We got a lot to cover, y'all, and we're joined by Caitlin Bird with the Post and Courier. And also, this is our 60th episode. Cue the music. This is our 60th episode, our Diamond Jubilee. We are a diamond that's been polished into a beautiful, brilliant stone. If you are listening to this podcast, you're basically married to us. Yep. So make sure you subscribe to us because we'll always be there for you. Just like a sweet, sweet conflict diamond. Diamond. And if you're feeling, you know, generous, send us some diamond gifts. Or just give us a review on iTunes. Whatever. We'll call it equal. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who write the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections of the podcast instead of wondering why there are no good summer movies. Oh, I know why, because it's not the 90s anymore and we don't make good movies anymore. Or while you decide not to follow OJ Simpson on Twitter, do not do it, please. The juice has logged on. You need to log off. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here is a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the state newspaper reports that South Carolina will get more than 13,000 new voting machines in time for the 2020 presidential election after a $51 million contract was awarded to Election Systems and Software, the nation's largest voting equipment vendor. Voters will now get a paper printout of their completed ballots after voting, which will then be entered into a scanner. Paperless voting has drawn increased scrutiny in recent years after questions of interference in the 2016 election. Number two, the Charleston Post and Courier reports a settlement has been finalized in the SCE&G lawsuit over the failed VC Summer nuclear project. Boondoggle update. The $2.2 billion settlement includes between $121 and $146 million for current and former SCE&G customers. The class action lawsuit began in November but had been stalled in recent months because of objections to legal fees the attorneys wanted to collect. The $2.2 billion award is the largest private class action settlement in the state's history. Number three, McClatchy, D.C. reports that Senator Lindsey Graham said in an interview that he disagreed with President Trump's view of taking information from foreign governments on political opponents. The comments come after President Trump told ABC's George Stephanopoulos that he would accept information from foreign governments and would not report it to the FBI. He since walked those statements back. Senator Graham says he told the president that it is not a crime to take information, but it's probably not a good idea. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you just a headline, little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news there is. And this one we might call Gator Bite. Headline, Florida couple uses pet alligator to reveal 10th child's gender. Who doesn't love a gender reveal party? And just like not posting to social media about your dad on Father's Day, we bury the lead. I mean, if you don't post, do people even know? Do they even care? Well, we have plenty of political news to talk about on this show, including which Democrats are making moves in new state polling, highlights from the weekend's Black Economic Alliance candidate forum in Charleston, and a rundown of the magic this very busy political week holds. To catch us up on all this news coming out of the Lowcountry, ahead of the festivities in Columbia this week, is Caitlin Bird, a political journalist at the Post and Courier and author of the Daily Palmetto Politics newsletter. Welcome back, Caitlin, and thanks for joining us from the newsroom in Charleston.
Thanks so much for having me, Gavin. It's great to be back.
And that newsletter, God bless you, Caitlin. I know how much work goes into those daily newsletters, and we appreciate you doing that. Keeps everyone updated every day.
Aw, thank you.
So let's start off with the latest Post and Courier poll that dropped on Sunday. What were some of the big findings from that poll looking at the 2020 Democratic field?
Absolutely. So the big top of the line news isn't that Joe Biden is still in the lead, because he is, with 37% of more than 2,000 South Carolina voters telling us that they would vote for him today. But it's really more the movement that's coming after Biden. The fact that Senator Elizabeth Warren is gaining momentum in this state, and also that South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is starting to do well as well. So Warren was polling with 17% and Buttigieg at 11. The next two that came after was Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Bernie Sanders, both respectively with 9%. That's really significant, because in the past, and even in other national polls, we've seen that it's really a Biden and Bernie Sanders. That's where the real fight has been. It's really been a Biden-Sanders face-off. And now we're seeing Elizabeth Warren starting to really move through the ranks. Same for Pete Buttigieg, who's something of a bit of a surprise in the field still as a whole. Some people have been hailing him as something of a media darling. He seemed to pop out of nowhere. But it seems like even if he did pop out of nowhere, he's trying to do something with that pop and really capitalize on it. So it's been really interesting for us here in South Carolina specifically to find out what South Carolina voters think about it. Because oftentimes when we're looking at those national polls, it's an early state poll. So we get clumped in with Iowa, with Nevada, and with New Hampshire. And so in this case, we were able to just look at South Carolina. And that's really important, since South Carolina, as you know, Gavin, is going to be a really critical test for these candidates among African-American voters in particular.
I think I saw some stuff going on Twitter just looking at the poll itself. And I think there was about 46% of these respondents were African-American, compared to the 60% that the electorate makes up. I know polls are polls, you know, we only put so much weight in them, but, you know, I will say that, you know, we do use them for some idea, especially in a field like this when there's 23 candidates. Mm-hmm. You know, this does kind of give us some guidance. I'm assuming that's what you guys kind of take away from all of this. It's not like it's very exact, but it does show maybe an overall trend. And of course, maybe going forward, there'll be some changes. It sounds like tweaks to just exactly how different this demographic is when they do this poll going forward.
Absolutely. I mean, you said it best. No poll is absolute, right? So when we're reporters and we're going out in the field and we're going to these events, when we're going to the Black Economic Presidential Forum, when we're going to different candidate events, we're talking with people individually and coming away with a lot of anecdotal and still very valuable information about voter sentiment. But when you're able to do a survey of more than 2,000 people, I mean, that's just a swath that you and I could never, ever hope to talk to 2,000 mm-hmm. people at one event. So it really helps us kind of keep a pulse. Now, I think that's probably the best analogy that I would use when we're talking about polls, because, you know, you never know which way a campaign's going to go. And just like a heartbeat, it can start to quicken, it can slow down. We might see it staying mostly the same. Hopefully for no one, it flatlines, but, you know, that's the way that politics goes. So it's polls should not be taken as the end all be all, but they are still something to keep an eye on. And especially when it's one that's so specific to South Carolina, because South Carolina is not Iowa, and it never will be.
Yeah, we did see Senator Sanders move down a good bit from his previous polls with y'all. And I know this poll went into the field right after he did his speech expanding upon his socialist views and policies. And so, again, like, he got pushed aside along with Senator Kamala Harris for Senator Elizabeth Warren and Mayor Pete Buttigieg moving up in the poll. So interesting to see that kind of jockeying going on. I'm also interested to see just how much, you know, when we're looking at that Warren and the Buttigieg bump there for both of them, that they did see such a good-sized bump also among the Black voting population, the percentage of the Black vote. You know, Warren getting about 14% and Buttigieg at 6%, coming from nothing to 6%. But Biden still holding on strong with more than half the majority right there. So interesting to see Biden, but again, his numbers are still maintaining for the most part.
Right, and one thing too is that we can go beyond the numbers too when you look at polls. So you can see that one of the reasons why, or I should say two of the reasons why Biden is polling so strong, is because many are citing first his experience as Obama's vice president, and then secondarily his ability to stand up to President Donald Trump. But those who did not go for Biden, they said that they're looking for new leadership, and that's going to be really the key question as to how long Biden can stay at the top of these polls. Is our Democrats looking for someone that they believe can stand up to President Trump, that they really like having that Obama connection? Or are they looking for something new? And that's something that every Democrat in every state is going to have to contend with.
And that was something I talked to Marva Smalls, who was a BEA advisory board member. I talked with her after the Black Economic Forum, which we're about to talk about. And she was saying, you know, Biden can't rest on his laurels. He can't just rely on, you know, his past history with Obama. While that's a huge factor for a lot of these voters out there when they see him and hear his name, it's not something that should be just taken for granted, it sounds like. And it's, you know, it's interesting. We haven't seen Biden since May. We'll see him this week, obviously, but you know, we didn't see him since he first announced.
Right. It's really telling, just thinking about the Black Economic Leadership Forum that we were just at. Remember the candidates who were invited but were unable to attend, which was Senator Sanders, Senator Harris, and former Vice President Joe Biden. None of them attended, but they all sent in videos. And Gavin, I don't know if you were in the room when Biden's video was played, but people were talking over it. It was almost as if they'd already heard what he had to say, and no one was really paying that much attention to him.
Yeah, so we did see Congressman, former Congressman Beto O'Rourke, Senator Cory Booker was there, along with Senator Elizabeth Warren and Mayor Pete Buttigieg. They were all in Charleston on Saturday talking with Soledad O'Brien for about 15 minutes apiece. You were inside the Charleston Music Hall, Caitlin. I was actually in the spin room watching. Did anything stick out to you from these candidates? I mean, what was the vibe within the music hall itself, and maybe who was kind of swayed, or the audience had a clear favorite?
Absolutely. It was really interesting to be in the auditorium itself. The press, we were sort of sanctioned off into one section of the auditorium, but we had a clear view at the first couple of sections in front of us. In addition, there were folks up in the rafters, so to speak, and it was really, really interesting energy, especially because the person who received the warmest reception was Senator Elizabeth Warren. People gave her a standing ovation. Other candidates did receive a few people who stood up for them after their remarks. Cory Booker would probably have to be the second most popular, quote unquote, if we're just going by applause and the audience response to it. But Senator Warren was definitely the crowd favorite. She was also one of the only candidates who engaged with the audience before the actual taping started. So every time a candidate would come onto the stage, they'd sit down, they'd hear their introduction, they'd say hi. For example, former Congressman Beto O'Rourke, he kind of looked a little bit stiff sitting in his seat and shifted around, didn't really say anything to the audience other than a quick little wave. But Elizabeth Warren and Soledad O'Brien, who was moderating this event, they were having a little bit of rapport, and Warren actually cracked a few jokes, and the audience ate it all up. She also was really talking to the audience and not at the audience, or not looking as much at the screens and the cameras that were pointed at her. It seemed like she was really trying to be there and be in the moment. And so anecdotally, she was the person who probably worked the audience the best, and it showed because she was the only one who really got a true standing ovation at the end of it all. And the other thing that we have to keep in mind is that this forum happened in Charleston, but it was televised the next morning on BET networks. So they were not only trying to make inroads with African-American voters in South Carolina, they were trying in some ways to make an appeal to African-Americans all around the country. So it's really interesting, and I was wondering a lot as I was just sitting in my seat in the auditorium as how these candidates were going to balance that, of having the in-person audience be so South Carolina-centric. People drove from Ladson, from Charleston, obviously, to be here. People were standing out in line for hours ahead of time just to get in the door. And then they also know in the back of their minds, this is going to be on BET at 10 a.m. the next morning. So it was really interesting to see how the candidates handled that.
And from one dedicated South Carolina audience to another, we're going to see this week is 22 of the 23 candidates, I believe, are going to be at Congressman Jim Clyburn's world-famous fish fry here in Columbia Friday at 7:30. It's going to be a lot of fish, I think like 2.2 tons of fish, 6,400 pieces of bread, in an open bar. So it's going to be a nice hot time here in famously hot Columbia. But again, you know, we saw these candidates on stage at the BEA Forum 15 minutes. Here for that event, the fish fry, it's only going to be about a minute, is my understanding, or a generous moment is what it sounds like. What can we expect from these 22 candidates to cover in a generous moment? Or is it going to be more about actually some of them being in South Carolina for the first time, or for the first time in a long time?
So I think that obviously it's going to be important that they are very intentional and thoughtful with their generous moment, whatever that means, whether it's a synopsis of their pitch that they've been giving on the trail, or whether it's really more personalized to South Carolina and how they are listening to South Carolinians. Because I think the how is going to be much more important to ears of Democrats than the what in this case. But it seems almost like these kinds of events, because it's not just the fish fry, it's the convention the next day, it's the Blue Palmetto dinner before the fish fry, that it's it's going to be about having that real face time with truly dedicated South Carolina Democrats. Because people who go to these events are not just people who are hoping to get a little bit of time with the candidates. Maybe they're an independent. No, this is Democrats. These are their home base. This is the bread and butter. Sorry for the bread analogy after just talking about the fish fry. But but this is really how to speak to South Carolina's Democratic base. And so I think for the fish fry in particular, because it's meant to be more informal, this is kind of the opportunity to show not only who they are as candidates, but who they are as people. Are they people that people feel comfortable eating fish with? Are they people that can really listen and take those issues and maybe turn it into actionable policy in the next couple of months, as long as they still have the campaign funds to continue going? Is this fish fry going to be referenced at the debates in Miami? We're going to just have to wait and see what kind of inroads get made here. And sometimes you just don't see the way that these things get built until further down the road. But to me, at least when we're talking specifically about the fish fry, this is about making personal inroads with Democrats who are going to vote Democrat no matter what on February 29th, 2020. And it's not so much about converting as it is solidifying.
And also finding out what walk-up song they're going to have is going to be a big deal, apparently, too. And then it sounds like, you know, I think, you know, it's going to be giving some introductions. Literally, some of them will be introducing themselves to voters mm-hmm. for the first time in some ways. Others will, you know, have their reputations and their previous, you know, visits to South Carolina to draw upon. But there are some candidates that will be here that know South Carolina way more than these other ones. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be interesting to see how they interact. And especially if people in the crowd even can maybe recognize some of these people. I mean, I think your Cory Bookers and your Bernie Sanders and your Kamala Harrises are way more recognizable than your Marianne Williamsons and your mm-hmm. John Hickenloopers.
Oh, absolutely. I wonder now if they're going to wear name tags, you know, when we're talking about the fish fry. Or are they going to be really wearing their T-shirts for their campaigns? I mean, it might not be a bad idea, especially for some of these lesser-known candidates. But I think it'll be interesting to see how much these candidates will allow themselves to loosen up. I've heard stories of there being footage out there of people boogieing to the electric slide. So I'm sort of secretly hoping for that we just see some mm-hmm. of these candidates break it down and really try and connect with people. And I think that tells us as to how much they're willing to let go in a field of more than 20 candidates. And if they can actually loosen up a little bit, because at this point it is anyone's race. You talk to people outside of the forum and they tell you they like bits and pieces of each of the candidates who are in the running, but who's going to stay and who's going to go? I mean, maybe we'll start to see the whittling down process after the debates, but you never know. Mm-hmm. And 2016 should teach every journalist and every political watcher that you can never guess what's going to happen.
And then, of course, the big kahuna is Saturday, the convention. It's going to go from like 9 to 6. You know, there's going to be some party business going on with Trav Robertson, easily expected to be reelected as chairman. But then there's also going to be these other candidates speaking for about 5 to 7 minutes, I believe, mm-hmm. throughout the day. I don't know if we've made a bingo card yet, but I feel like there will be a lot of similar phrases used. And of course, journalists will be hustling all day. I'm wondering, you know, this is also going to be maybe a little bit of an opportunity for them, again, to expound upon what they probably couldn't the night before, but also get ready for some of that debate one-on-one action. Not that they're all going to be on the same stage at the convention together, but they're going to have to get their shtick down to 7 minutes, and they're going to have to learn how to speak concisely and not lose the crowd and also stand out from their huge field. So it should be interesting to see how they all approach their time on the stage at the convention.
I mean, even order might matter, right? So where are they going to put Biden? Are they going to sandwich mm-hmm. him in the middle? I mean, one would think they won't start him off in the day since he's the big name ID right now in the pack, but it's going to be one to watch. And I mean, 7 minutes apiece, it doesn't sound like much, but it will fly by, and there is opportunity to put some policy in there. You can do it. You can do it in 7 minutes. And then secondarily, you know, they're also, these candidates, kind of like they did at the forum that we went to this past weekend, they're also going to have to be juggling the fact that this will be appearing on national audiences too. MSNBC is going to be there as well and having individual stand-ups with these candidates. So again, these candidates are going to have to figure out how to talk to South Carolina, but also talk to everybody.
And we're really jamming this in here, and just have to get out of this conversation right now, Caitlin, but there's so much more to talk about, and we will talk about, but there's also that Planned Parenthood forum going on at the same time mm-hmm. as the convention. We don't really have much time to elaborate on that, but that's going to be competing for time as well. So a lot of factors going on this week, and like we said, that's what's making it such a high holy week of politics here in South Carolina. But I'm glad you're kind of covering it with us, and we'll stay in touch and see how this week goes. And I appreciate you joining us this week, Caitlin.
No problem. We'll see you in the trenches, Gavin.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. And first off, we recently got a question about why we do the whip crack when I say campaign trail. If you grew up as an older millennial, I'm going to use that term correctly, you know what an Apple IIe desktop computer looks like and the magic of Oregon Trail on that huge, what, 5 1/4 floppy disk? Powerful computing power. But we used to play it all the time, the Oregon Trail. The majesty of playing that game of going from Independence to the Willamette Valley in Oregon. People dying from snake bites and dysentery and spoiling food and such. And having to buy oxen, which is where we get the whip crack from, because we are on this Oregon Trail, this never-ending Oregon Trail that we call the campaign trail. So now you know, the more you know. Thanks for hanging along with us. Please help. Okay, well, we already told you everything you need to know about this week's festivities, but here's a quick rundown just for your sanity's sake. Friday at 7 p.m. is the Blue Palmetto Dinner at the Columbia Convention Center. Illinois Congresswoman Sherry Bustos, who chairs the DCCC, is the speaker, and the event is sold out. But blocks away, gates will open at 7:30 p.m. at Cobo Plaza, which is behind Adventure Children's Museum, for Jim Clyburn's world-famous fish fry. There's going to be 2.2 tons of fish, 6,400 pieces of bread, and an open bar at the free event. Candidates will speak very briefly. Saturday, the state convention begins at 9 a.m. and is scheduled to run until 6 p.m. I wish I could give you more details, but we have not seen a program of the event yet. 21 candidates have RSVP'd to speak, and we will recap all the sweet, sweet fishy action next week on the podcast. And just another little tidbit for our campaign trail. The Reckoning Crew, a group of very politically active, predominantly black women, has announced their support for California Senator Kamala Harris. This, according to the Post and Courier. The group will help campaign for Harris by going door to door and also help recruiting volunteers. In our final section, did you know we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government? It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with us for some state trivia? He is. Welcome, Russ.
Hey, back from the beach.
Oh, is that where that tan is from?
Yeah, I'm sure you probably don't have time to do things like that.
Thank you, Russ. Yes, I'm just...
It's a summertime ritual for those of us who are born and raised in South Carolina.
You think go to the beach?
Yeah. You grow up at the beach, you go back. We went to a media event last week or so ago at the State House with Governor McMaster, you may recall.
Yeah.
He was late arriving because his staff said he was late coming back from the beach.
Mm.
And you know, most of our very recent governors have all seemed to vacation along the South Carolina coast. Again, it's one of those rituals, especially if you are a native-born South Carolinian.
Mm.
If you look through the 115 governors that South Carolina has had, almost all of them have been native-born South Carolinians.
Mm.
Our research department couldn't come up with an exact number, almost all of them.
That department has had some difficulties lately.
I think they're at the beach as well. So the question is, who is the most recent person elected governor of South Carolina who is not a native-born South Carolinian?
It's going to be borderline xenophobic, I feel like.
Okay. A, David Beasley, who was governor from 1995 to 1999. His successor, Jim Hodges. His successor, Mark Sanford. His successor, Nikki Haley.
I'm going to go with Hodges.
Going with Hodges. Okay. The answer is Mark Sanford.
Oh, my God. I thought Sanford was... Oh, no.
Marshall Clement Mark Sanford, born in 1960 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, God. This is Florida Man news right here. I thought it was Hodges.
I think he's born in Lancaster.
Well, Sanford does a good job about making it look like he's...
He does, and spends a lot of time on the South Carolina coast.
God, we're going to get letters on this one.
And hiking in the mountains, but, you know,
Jeez, you bringing fire today, Russ.
That's what a little time off will do for you.
If only I could do it. Well, thank you, Russ.
My pleasure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like our friends of the pod, Roman Sturgis and Whipcrack99. Ooh, thank y'all. Such great 60th anniversary presents. Those are the diamonds we're looking for. Follow us on Instagram at SCLeadPod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to SCLEDE@SCETV.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Sean Scott is our intern. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on June 17th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message.
If you're gonna cough, A.T., just get out of here. Do it in the other room.
I'm sorry.
Try to do a secret message.